The Cycling Podcast, in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee shops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm with the Cesc Fabregas of the Cycling Podcast, Daniel Freib.
What is that based on now?
And the Mark Lawrenson
of
the Cycling Podcast.
It was more to set up.
I mean, I love the fact that as I introduced the Cesc Fabregas of the Cycling Podcast, Lionel actually lifted his microphone to his mouth at that point.
Not in anticipation. I was just wondering. I knew that wouldn't be me.
That presupposes that at some indefinite point in the future, I'll be the subject of a highly controversial move to one of your podcast rivals.
You're welcome. I'm stunned
Laurel,
by that. Listeners outside the UK, Mark Lawrenson is possibly the dourest, most miserable pundit on the BBC's World Cup football coverage, and I'm failing to see the
to be fair,
comparison.
One thing I would say is that Laurel, as he's known affectionately, doesn't really do his research. Lionel, you're very different in that respect.
Well,
you're very different.
Getting
in
damned.
Another respect.
So from insulted to damned with faint praise.
And my name is Gary Lineker. Anyway, moving on. That's the only World Cup chat we'll indulge in, I think, in this. What's this? This is our penultimate podcast before the Tour de France. Is that correct?
It is. One more to go before we head off to the Vendée, Richard.
Yeah, it's a long way, isn't it, Lionel? We were looking at the logistics the other day. We're going there in our Skoda that we've kept from the women's tour.
How many podcasts before the UCI ruin everything, ruin our summer, ruin our July by announcing some? Well, it's going to be controversial either way, isn't it? Verdict on the Chris Froome case, and just, you know.
Why do you think that's imminent, Daniel?
Well, I don't know. Throw a stick of dynamite at everything that, you know, we planned we were going to say, write, do.
It doesn't really affect us. We're very, very nimble on our feet, aren't we?
We'll just do an extra one.
Just go and record something else.
Yeah.
Overlay it with something new and fresh. That's the beauty of podcasting.
But are we picking up a vibe that there might be something happening?
Well, a lot of teams have been announced for the tour, haven't they? Mm. Sky are one of the few still to be announced. And I don't know, are there rumblings that something might happen still between now and the start of the tour?
I mean,
there'd be speculation.
Not so much a jungle drum, but a sort of a light rim tap or snare, maybe. I don't know. What's beating?
A shuffle. Let's deal first with stuff that we do know.
Okay,
let's go into the news roundup, and then we can indulge in as much speculation as we like.
Okay, well, very, very succinct this week, Rich.
Not a lot going on, is there?
No, the Tour de France is looming and everything. Well, everything's happening, but it's also a brief pause before the big show gets on the road. As Richard said, tour teams are being announced. I have no intention of reading through all of the tour teams that have been announced so far, but the biggest news so far is that the sprinter, the pocket rocket, Caleb Ewan, has been left out of the Mitchelton Scott team. The reason that is perhaps controversial is because, well, Mitchelton Scott had announced as far back as the start of the year that Caleb Ewan would go to the Tour de France.
Well, at the end of 2017, in fact, Napalm, it was in December.
They mentioned it, well, Matt White mentioned it at our live event in London in November, didn't he? He sort of said, well, he basically confirmed that Ewan would go to the Tour, and then they formally announced it, didn't they?
In a press release in December.
Was it
correct?
In December? Ah, as early as
it
that.
It was.
But he's been bumped, and all of Mitchelton Scott's focus will be on Adam Yates and an overall bid for victory. And again, some rumbles and rumours that perhaps Caleb Ewan is leaving that team next season. Maybe we'll discuss that in the first part. More transfer rumours that have broken on several websites, including Cycling News today, that Richie Porte, who will be leading BMC Racing at the Tour de France, is perhaps joining Trek Segafredo next year. That's a move that would make certainly make sense on paper. BMC Racing's future very uncertain following the death of the team's big backer and benefactor Andy Rees earlier this year. Trek Segafredo, kind of a big budget but fairly directionless team in a lot of senses, so that would be a reasonable matchup. We may discuss that as well. In the racing, there's been the Adriatica Ionica stage race in Italy, which has been won by Ivan Sosa of Gianni Savio's Androni team, the latest South American sensation coming off the Savio production line. He won the biggest stage of the race on the Passaggio. Elia Viviani also won a couple of stages there, and it's national championships fortnight.
I think, sorry, Lionel, just to interrupt, rather than talking about Gianni Savio's production line, I think it may be more appropriate to talk about Ivan Sosa rolling out of his or off his forecourt. There have been certain comparisons made between Gianni Savio and a certain fictional second-hand car salesman, Swiss Tony.
Savio, a contract in one hand and a big brief, empty briefcase. Correct. Ready for some money in another. Well, yeah, he certainly looks a hot property just by looking at the way he won that race. But the national championships are spread over a couple of weekends this year, which is a bit unusual. That's because the tour is starting a week later. So far, Peter Sagan has won the Slovakian title. Yves Lampaert has won in Belgium. Gorka Izagirre has won in Spain. Michal Kwiatkowski in Poland. And Matej Mohoric in Slovenia. And we'll look out to see who wins the other national championships at the weekend. And then everyone will unveil their jerseys at the Tour de France. A little bit of more distressing news from Berlin. Multiple world champion Christina Vogel had a bad crash on the track. The early reports are that she suffered a spinal injury. We don't know too many details about that at the moment and obviously won't speculate on that, but wish her all the best in a speedy recovery.
It's actually the Cottbus track in the old East Germany, which I know well because I went there with Chris Hoy when he was training for the Beijing Olympics, and it sounds like there was an awful collision there. We don't know too many details yet involving Vogel, but I do know that it's an open track. I mean, it's outdoors and it's you can just wander onto it, you know. And I know myself, it can be potentially very dangerous because I almost wandered onto it myself at one point. And, you know, a lot of top riders train there and behind motorbikes and so on. And it did strike me when I was there that it could be quite a dangerous place. So we wish Christina Vogel all the best.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Yes, thank you very much indeed to Rafa, our main sponsor. And the shout out this week for Rafa is for their new graffiti range of clothing. This draws on the passion of the crowd. It features 8 of Rafa's most technically advanced jerseys, bibs and accessories with a print inspired by cycling's road graffiti. So it's the graffiti collection. I had a wee look at it and it's very understated and nice, quite different, quite a departure for Rafa, but go and have a look at it at rafa.cc, the graffiti collection. Now, Lionel, you were telling us in your news roundup there about the various tour lineups. How many have actually been named and how many have still to be named? I know you've got your spreadsheet there with all your, you know, Bill McLaren style, John Motson style preparation.
It's
for
roughly half and half.
It's about
now.
Half and half. A couple more today. Katusha Alpecin were announced today. Again, they're going with the sprinter leader combination with Marcel Kittel, Ilner Zakarin, hedging their bets a little bit. Ian Boswell has been picked, his first Tour de France, obviously well known to podcast listeners. And we might be doing something with Ian at the Tour de France, details to follow. So that's great news for him. But the main controversy, I suppose, so far has been the Caleb Ewan omission from Mitchelton Scott. And as you said, there are rumours that he's moving teams and that may have something to do with it. But Matt White talked about his, you know, his lack of success this year. You know, he's had a few wins, but not too many. And I think there's an issue here going into the tour with just how open the sprinting field looks. There's a lot of good sprinters, but there's nobody been dominant this year, and there's nobody who you would look at and say they're going to dominate the sprints at the Tour this year. And so if you take a sprinter, you're gambling, aren't you?
Well, you are. I also think that, you know, Caleb Ewan has known since December, probably before December, that he would be going to the Tour de France. And so, really, to then judge him on his results, I don't think his form has been, you know, terrible enough to say, well...
Almost won Milan-San Remo, didn't
Yeah, can't say, well, you've been bang out of form. If he's built his entire year around riding the Tour de France, I can understand him being very disappointed in the least. But I also understand Mitchelton Scott putting everything behind Adam Yates. Although when you look at the rest of their team, I have to say it looks on paper... it doesn't look as strong, really, as the team that supported Simon Yates at the Giro d'Italia by a long chalk. Mikel Nieve is riding again. Daryl Impey can climb well. But the rest are real kind of, you know, it's diesel engine after diesel engine, isn't it? Jack Bauer, Mark Durbridge, Luke Durbridge.
His brother.
Who's Mark Durbridge? Mark Durbridge, I think, is a darts player.
I've been taking a darts player instead of Caleb. No wonder he's annoyed.
I spent a few days with Ned Bolting, and of course, as well as commentating on the Tour de France for ITV, he also does the post-match interviews for the Arrows. So that might be where that little slip comes. But yeah, Matt Heyman, Michael Hepburn, not Audrey Hepburn, and Damien Howson. So that's a great team if you want to tank along on the flat or chase in the valleys.
Good team for stage 9.
Yeah, not so good. That's a very good point, actually, yeah.
And the team time trial.
So maybe it makes perfect sense. Who knows? I've just ridden a line of diesel engines through my argument there.
I suspect, do you not, Daniel, one of you, when we were chatting about this between us last week, made the point that the team is, whatever they say in the run-up to a race, they're entitled to pick whoever they want to pick, of course. But, Daniel, what are your thoughts about it? Is it unfair on Caleb Ewan? Are Mitchelton Scott right to put it all behind Adam Yates?
I think, Rich, when you say that the sprint field looks very open this year, you're right, and to my mind that's another reason to pick Caleb Ewan, because, you know, if I think back on all the sprints I've seen this year, the one sprint I've seen that made me think that is the guy who could dominate sprints in the Tour de France was the sprint for second place in Milan-San Remo, where he absolutely blitzed everyone. Now, that's a, you know, it's a particular race, it's a particular set of circumstances after 290 kilometres, but still, that was very promising. Since then, he hasn't won enough. And, you know, if you think back to last autumn when Matt White came over, I would say that Matt White's praise, he was very sort of conspicuous in his praise for Fernando Gaviria, and almost in comparison with Caleb Ewan, while not doing Ewan down, Matt White did keep stressing how good a bike rider. If we were talking about, you know, that emerging new generation of sprinters, he kept emphasizing the point that Gaviria had a bit more nous, was maybe a little bit more skilled in the last kilometre, and that this sort of posed a problem for, or could pose a problem for Caleb Ewan in the future. And it reminded me a little bit of the notes that Matt White struck when talking about Michael Matthews a couple of years ago. Almost, it seemed at the time, getting his excuses in early for why the team were going to let Matthews go. But Matt White said on a number of occasions that he was pretty much a carbon copy of Peter Sagan, but slightly inferior in a lot of ways, and it reminded me slightly of that.
They took Matthews, didn't they? Knowing that he was leaving, and he repaid them with a stage win, didn't they?
They did. I mean, going back to the press release, I'm sure they regret that now, and that's a faux pas, that's something they won't do again. And as far as the orientation of the team is concerned, they're in a bit of a similar position to Quickstep last year, the position that Quickstep have been in for a few years. We've talked about this a lot, how if contracts come up for a renewal simultaneously, big contracts or contracts for important riders who over the course of the previous 2 years have radically increased their value, and that is the case with the Yates brothers, then it puts a great stress on the budget. And it puts a great stress on the finances if the team wants to maintain those riders and maintain the direction that they're in. And I think, you know, the Yateses are probably going to earn double what they're currently earning next year or when it comes to renewal time. And so something has to give. Someone has to be sacrificed. And you look at the other riders that Mitchelton Scott have got. They've got Jack Haig, who is waiting in the wings and waiting for his first opportunity in a major tour. And you've got Chavez as well, who I don't think the team is necessarily, I don't think anyone, including Chavez, has been thrilled with his last 18 months. But still, he's a guy with a lot of pedigree and he's got another year on his contract. So someone has to go. And I think Simon Yates, although they're different riders, Simon and Adam, I think that will have given Matt White and it will have given Mitchelton Scott ideas. Particularly when you look at the tour route, it's a very mountainous tour route. And if Simon Yates can go within 3 days of winning the Giro, then who knows whether Adam Yates might be able to go with, as far in the Tour de France. And Ewan is also not a sprinter who is going to be able to contribute much. And with an 8-man team, you need versatile riders. And Caleb Ewan's never finished a major tour. The furthest he's got is 15th in the Giro last year. So he's a guy who is only there
15 stages. Yeah.
15 stages, yeah. He's a guy who's only there to do his thing and try and win stages in the first week. So I'm sure it was a hard choice that they had to make. But my interpretation is that he's probably signed for someone else. We think Lotto Soudal. That's given Mitchelton Scott license to say, right, we were 90% a GC team before, and that was the direction we were going in. Now we're going to put all of our eggs in that basket.
Yeah, the 8-man team situation certainly made that decision for them, I would guess, because very, very difficult to split a team down the middle. I mean, Kittel and Zakarin is the example Richard mentioned there, but Zakarin is not at the same kind of level as even Adam Yates, really. You wouldn't think, certainly hasn't shown quite enough this season, hasn't had the results in the past to suggest that he could get on the podium, really, at the Tour de France. But Caleb Ewan, obviously disappointed at people around Ewan, disappointed with the way he was let down, relatively last minute. But while I kind of understand that sort of outpouring of sympathy, that's the nature of elite team selection, isn't it? There's only 8 spots and there's a large number of riders competing for those spots. What would be interesting if he goes to Lotto Soudal next season, not perhaps as much harmony there, because one of their riders, Yella Wallace, took to social media as well to express his disappointment, saying that it was the second year in a row that he had found out that he'd not made the cut for the Tour de France, and he'd found out on social media before being informed by the team. So lots of different ways for riders to find out about this disappointment.
What's interesting, there are two things that are interesting. I wonder if the situation with Caleb Ewan might be different had Matteo Trentin been fit, because he would have been an excellent lead out man for him, and perhaps they felt they were missing the support that he would need, although guys like Daryl Impey would no doubt be very useful. The other thing about this story is the fact that Mitchelton Scott, as well as evolving into a GC team, they've also evolved away from being an Australian team. If you look at the number of big Australian talents who have slipped through their fingers over the years or been let go, from Michael Matthews to Caleb Ewan, and lots of the big Aussies are on other teams. Richie Porte, Simon Gerrans has joined him there this year from, joined him at BMC this year from Mitchelton Scott. They don't appear to be a team that is setting out to be an Australian team. They're based in Australia, their funding comes from Australia, but they're an international team, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, Rich. And again, just to go back to the point about the 8-man teams, we've talked in the last couple of months about how a group of riders is developing in most of the World Tour teams, which is really seeing their prospects of ever riding Grand Tours severely limited now. And the Caleb Ewan issue just brings home yet again that there's an awful lot of pressure on selection, and most teams, particularly when it comes to the Tour de France, most team managers are very, very conservative. And if you look at the average ages of the teams, it's very high. Team managers tend to want to pick guys who they know will get round, they know will complete the route and have done the tour before. But it leaves a lot of guys in a position where they're almost never going to ride Grand Tours. I don't think that's going to be the case with Caleb Ewan, but even Ewan himself, if the relationship has soured now with Mitchelton Scott to the point where, well, I don't know if he was down to do the Vuelta, but if they don't pick him for the Vuelta either, presumably his new team will want him to ride the Tour de France next year, and that will be, he will have missed 6 Grand Tours since his last major tour, in which was the Giro in 2017. And you know, if you think back, or if you think of all the sort of canons and dogmas in professional cycling about how important it is to ride major tours physiologically, because you know, riders always say that they step up when they've got major tours in their legs, then you know, a lot of guys are going to be are being deprived of that benefit now because of these smaller team sizes. But again, as Napalm says, that's elite sport, isn't it? It's highly competitive.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
This week's episode sponsor is Moneybox again. Moneybox is the simple way to save and invest. It's a mobile-only app that allows you to round up your everyday purchases to the nearest pound and invest the spare change. So when you buy a coffee for £2.40, you can automatically invest the 60 pence change. You can invest in companies such as Netflix, Tesla and Nike via simple tracker funds.
You've signed up now, Rich, haven't you? I've been a Moneybox customer since last November, well before any association we had with them.
I thought if it's good enough for Lionel, it's good enough for me, because I know you're very careful with your money.
Oh, come on. I mean that's that. That's a euphemism, isn't it?
No, it's a compliment, actually.
Okay. No, I'm circumspect, I would say. I wouldn't. I wanted to see it in action, and before I kind of, I must admit, the roundups I really like, because you also, it kind of, you keep a track of what you're spending on your debit card. So you see each transaction go through, and then I swipe to round up, and you see the total going up. The big mistake I made in the early days was when it was a bit down, my fund was a bit down, I was getting a little bit antsy.
But, not like you, Lionel.
Well, but you've got to take the long-term view on these things, and certainly 6 or 7 months on, I'm really happy with how my tree is growing.
Does it affect some of your spending decisions? I mean, do you get something that's going to put a little bit more? Would you buy a cup of coffee for £3.10 rather than £2.90?
That's a very good philosophical point. Yeah.
I wonder.
I haven't thought of it like that, but I certainly will now. Join 100,000 people investing in their future with Moneybox. As with all investing, your capital is at risk and you may get back less than you invest. All investing should be regarded as longer term, which I have come to accept, Richard.
So visit the App Store or Play Store to download the Moneybox app today. Visit the App Store or the Play Store to download the Moneybox app today.
Well, Rich, the Tour de France field is taking shape. My spreadsheet is taking shape.
What an impressive piece of work that is.
Colour-coded, Rich. And just to pick up on a point Daniel made there about how reluctant teams tend to be when it comes to fielding debutants, that's something that, as this spreadsheet grows, will become apparent, because I'm shading in the first-time tour riders in a sort of light grey. And when you look at the first-time riders, you know, quite a lot of them have got some real experience in one of the other two Grand Tours. So just looking at a glance, the teams that have been announced so far, AG2R have got one first-timer, and that's Sylvain Dillier, who's won a Giro stage. Lotto Soudal have got Marcinski, who won a couple of stages at the Vuelta last year. Bora Hansgrohe are fielding Postelberger, who won a stage of the Giro last year and wore the pink jersey. So very few of the teams will field real green as the grass young riders, and that's because, as you say, Daniel, reliability is a chief factor. But we can't go through all of the teams because they haven't all been announced. We'll get a much clearer picture probably this time next week. But the headlines really are, as you'd expect, AG2R are going in with Romain Bardet and everybody behind him. Bora Hansgrohe have got Peter Sagan, who, when I was looking at the tour route, I mean, you could make a case for him winning every stage in the first 9 days bar the team time trial. I mean, that's
I could win that as well.
Decent show. Yeah,
could win
team
that.
For that, haven't they?
And of course they will be also fielding Rafał Majka, twice King of the Mountains, and we heard last week at a Hansgrohe event that they've got a very ambitious plan. They're hoping for a top five
to win all 9 stages. all the first 9 stages.
I think that's a bit beyond Majka, but top 10 and a King of the Mountain jersey and a stage win certainly within reach. Groupama FDJ without Thibaut Pinot, of course, so they've got Arnaud Démare for the sprints and Godu.
And the cobbled stage.
Yes, of course.
And the day before, Bastille Day stage will go through, I think it will go through Beauvais, where Arnaud Démare is from.
Good. You've been doing some research as well, Rich. This is encouraging. This is encouraging for the
only
tour,
that
right?
Only that stage.
They've also got David Godu, who is a young, green as the grass talent. Be interesting to see how he goes on.
Straight out of a Harry Potter novel, isn't he?
Yeah.
He doesn't look old enough to ride the Tour de France.
No, he doesn't. No, very fresh-faced. Lotto Soudal have got quite a lot of experience. Thomas de Gent, André Greipel, Jelle Vanendert, all former stage winners, of course. Thijs Benoot will do his second Tour de France for them. Mitchelton Scott we've talked about. Movistar confirmed that they're fielding the big four, as we're calling them, Nairo Quintana, Mikel Landa, Alejandro Valverde and Marc Soler, who'll be making his tour debut. And when you look at their lineup, they've also got André Amador, who's done more than 10 Grand Tours, a great rider to have in the support chain.
Between them, Napalm, that team has 40 Tour de France starts, and that's with Soler in there, who's had zero. So between seven riders, they've got 40 Tour de France starts.
Benati, Eviti and Rojas have all... are all experienced as well, aren't they? Quick Step really interests me because they've got Alaphilippe, Bob Jungels, and Fernando Gaviria and Philippe Gilbert. That's an awful lot of stage-winning potential spread across that team. And Team Lotto NL Jumbo have announced that they are taking Primoz Roglic, as we expected, for the GC, and Dylan Groenewegen, who won
on the Champs-Élysées for GC as well. In fact, Kruijswijk is slated as the leader. I mean, yeah, Groenewegen, we didn't talk about. We went to Hansgrohe event last week with Sam Bennett. He reckons Groenewegen is the quickest on his day of all the sprinters. So
I would agree that the atomic tadpole is the man to beat in
so
the sprints.
He could be the dominant sprinter.
Well, he won on the Champs-Élysées at the end of last year's tour, could carry on where he left off by winning the opening road stage. Who knows?
Do you think he'll get his Ferrari this year? Famously, infamously, last year he promised that if he won four stages he was going to buy himself a Ferrari, and he looked rather ridiculous having been completely off the pace for 20 stages, but then in Paris he came up trumps, didn't he?
Won on the Champs-Élysées and treated himself to a Renault Clio.
another potential first timer, chaps, is Egan Bernal. And if you allow me just to go off on a small tangent, there was an interview this week in Marca, I think it was, or it was one of the main Spanish dailies. Oscar Sevilla, remember him of Opera Super
top 10
infamy,
finisher in the Spanish World Race Championship at the weekend.
In the Spanish,
he's about 42.
Yeah. He's been training with Egan Bernal, and he gave a big interview with Marca, I think, about Bernal, saying that the professional cycling hasn't seen his like for years and years. But it just occurred to me what an invidious sort of situation that is for someone like Bernal. If Oscar Sevilla, whose reputation is pretty much mud, fairly or unfairly, he was never actually banned for Operación Puerto, but he was banged to rights and he was sacked by T-Mobile. If he goes off of his own initiative and gives an interview with Marca talking about, you know, the great relationship, this kind of mentoring role that he likes to think he has for Bernal, and he's been giving him tips on this and that, it's not great for Team Sky in the current climate, and it's not great for Bernal, is it?
It's also interesting in relation to an article I've just read in Pro Cycling, actually, an interview with Richie Porte and Simon Gerrans, where Richie Porte says that the Team Sky riders who are based in Monaco are not allowed to train with riders from other teams, apparently.
Wow.
So, you know, Sevilla's still a rider on another team. So I don't know if that's a rule that applies to Sky riders wherever they're based. Not really very practical, is it? Or enforceable?
No, I would have to go back and actually check the piece whether he specifically said they were training together. They were certainly photographed together in kit, and it sounded very much as though they had been training together, and he had been dispensing advice to Bernal.
It's a bit like you established last year, didn't you, that Davide Formolo, who was at the time riding for Cannondale, was being coached or mentored by Pipili, wasn't he?
Correct, yeah.
Leonardo Pipili, who he had his problems in the past, didn't he? As they like to euphemistically say.
Well, will we move on to national championships? Or are you still working through your team?
No,
final?
No. That's up, that we're up to date. By the time this is out, you know, some teams will have announced. It is fascinating watching how the teams announce their lineups for the tour.
that's really taken on a life of its own, hasn't it? The way, well, Lotto's, they set up some elaborate, Mark Sargent phoning or WhatsApp, or adding names to the WhatsApp group, wasn't it?
You see, when Wallace got upset about this, I initially wondered whether this was part of the joke.
Maybe.
Maybe.
It would almost have worked as part of the joke. However, alas, I don't think
no,
it
was. No, but teams are, you know, going for ever more elaborate ways of announcing their lineups.
I quite like the haphazard way. I mean, we're kind of all waiting. You know, Team Sunweb haven't announced. Team Sky haven't announced yet. There's several big teams haven't announced. And
I'd like a team just turn up on the day.
Well, yeah. What I think there's great potential for some kind of NFL draft style TV extravaganza, broadcast a week before the tour, you know, where the teams are all in their separate bases, a bit like the Eurovision Song Contest voting system. Okay, we're going over to Lotto NL Jumbo, and they're all sat around a windmill in clogs. I mean, I don't want to get into too many national stereotypes, or I wouldn't force all of the riders to wear national costume. You know, Team Sky in Morris dancing outfits. But I think they're missing a trick here. ASO and Velon perhaps could instigate this as the great innovators of professional cycling.
Well, chaps, you might remember that before the 2007 Giro, which started in Sardinia, Oleg Tinkov convened the sort of long list of riders for his Tinkov team for the Giro, and they didn't know what they were doing there. I think they thought it was some kind of training camp, pre-Giro training camp, and he actually declared that he was going to pick the team based on the results of the time trial.
Yeah, I remember that.
And they all had to ride against each other, and he picked the best
nine
riders.
When are we
going to
announce the cycling podcast lineup for the tour, Lionel? How are we going to do it? Is it going to be based on performance in this podcast?
Oh, heavens. Looks like I've got a long July at home then.
All right, Laurel.
Well, looking at your notes here, your typed out printed notes and then written in pen at the top, you've obviously come up with this. It says Cesc Fabregas and Mark Lawrence, and you've obviously come up with this on the tube.
Don't show my workings, Lionel. Just to remind me, sometimes I forget my gags.
Well, stage one's been boring, hasn't
national
it?
National champion. Championships. I mentioned that we met Sam Bennett at the Hansgrohe event last week. Now, Sam Bennett is just coming off the back of three stage wins at the Giro d'Italia. He's been spending a bit of time back home in Ireland. He's from Carrick-on-Shore, the same town as Sean Kelly, of course. And I mentioned that I asked him about the sprinting field for the tour, who he saw being dominant. He ran through pretty much the name of every sprinter who was riding. So he seemed to be as unsure about that as we are, but as I mentioned earlier, he said Groenewegen was the fastest. But we spoke to him about a few things. I mean, you asked him a little bit about his father, who was a professional footballer in Belgium. That's why he was born in Belgium, Sam Bennett. Then we went on to ask him about the national championship, because that's this weekend in Ireland. He's desperate to win the road race, as he tells us. And it's really interesting, I think, to hear how a guy like that, who's at the top of his game now, how determined he is to win that jersey and take it back to some of the big races in Europe.
Sam, there's a big sporting event going on at the moment, the World Cup. Your dad was a footballer in Belgium. Who will you be supporting when England play Belgium next week?
Ooh. Oh, that's a tough one. I haven't actually thought about that, because I was like, support England. And then I was like, but I have a lot of fans in Belgium now. I don't actually have a lot of fans in Belgium. But that's a tough one, isn't it?
That's really interesting.
Not for me, it's not.
That's really interesting. I thought that would be a no-brainer. You know, the Irish wouldn't support England. But, you know, obviously wrong there. But a slightly serious question connected to your dad's career as a professional footballer. Did you pick up anything from him, or has he ever talked to you about the difference between sport as just an activity, something you do for fun, and turning it into a living? Because it struck me that you could have slipped out of professional cycling at certain points. Did you kind of learn anything by osmosis, perhaps, or pick anything up, or did he talk to you about that?
I hate to admit it, but maybe he was right about a few things. He understands sport. He was a competitive athlete. He had that mind frame. He understands how managers are, how teammates are, how that goes, how contracts are done. He understands that part. I actually can't work with sports psychologists because they sound so much like my dad, but it's only because he kind of knows what the mind frame you need to be in. When I was growing up, yeah, of course, like, I pretend I'm not listening, but I do take it in. But like, maybe I'm immature, I'm 27 years of age, I should get over this, but like, how many guys want to listen to their dad? Like, teenagers and that, they don't. But like, he was correct in a lot of things he was saying. And also, when you're brought up in that mind frame, I suppose it's there. I think I do have like a good mind frame for an athlete, and maybe there's some things I need to work on, but the foundation was there. So yeah, I definitely could learn a lot from him. There's a lot of things you can relate to and similarities.
We were talking earlier about the Irish Road Race Championships coming up about a week and a half. You were saying that's the hardest race of the year for you to win. How do you approach that?
At the moment, I haven't been training for it because I can't get fresh after the Giro. Like, I had 2 weeks where I felt okay, and then it hit me like a wall. Now I'm just trying to get fresh. I'm hoping that I'll get a good 9-day block in or something like that, because I can't lose form. I have so much miles done. I just need to get the engine moving again. So I just have to relax, get right, and then build, and whatever time I've left, try and get ready. But
can you explain why it's so hard? You're off coming in off the back of, you know, winning 3 stages of the Giro. It's a race where, you know, teams shouldn't be too much of a factor, certainly the highest level teams. Why is it such a difficult race for you to win?
Just I have won 3 stages of Giro and just came out 1 week off and then got a result in random call. So I think all eyes are on me. Last year I only got podiums in the Giro and all eyes were on me. I couldn't move. I tried to control. I had the race under control for 130 kilometers. I did some of my best 10-minute, 5-minute, 1-minute power on the flat, and I could not. I blew up. I was riding I'd attack like a bunch. Like, I'd attack with a full gas sprint, and I'd go across to the breakaways. That's the only way I could control it, because people would get together, bring me back, work together, and then when they had me, guys would just right off the front and nobody would follow them. They just ride away. I was like, come on. And then everybody thinks I have an engine because I'm winning, but at the end of the day, I'm not the one pulling all the time at the front. I'm a sprinter. I get delivered. And one part, they know that because they won't bring me to the finish line, but on the other side, they expect me to pull them around all day. So
you need Bora Hansgrohe to sign an Irishman.
Well, the Irish Champs is actually an open race. I could send a full team in. I was looking at the costs last year, and I had a New Zealand guy. I was going to bring in Zach, Shane. I was going to see if I could buy Chi-Chi in. I was looking to see what climbers were going to sprinters national champs to see if they just want to come to Ireland. And I was like, what do I have to do to get this jersey? And I put, like, I know that there'd be people, yeah, not happy if I brought a full team. And, if I got 8 guys, although I don't know, is the number that's limited? If I got 10 guys, and I'd nearly get the bus over.
You clearly want that jersey, don't you?
Yeah, it would be a dream to have that jersey, because I want to represent it the best I can, and I want to win races having the Irish tricolour on me. I want to give Irish fans something to shout about in the bunch sprints, and I want to really represent that jersey. I think guys in the past, I think Ryan and Roach and everybody who has had it, had done a fantastic job representing it, don't get me wrong, but I want to represent it in my own way. If I could be winning, like, Giro stages wearing that jersey, I'd be so happy.
So that was Sam Bennett, and I mean, Lionel, we've obviously encountered him a lot at races and so on. He is a guy who I think feels a lot of pressure sometimes at races. He can be quite overwhelmed by that. We spoke to him a lot when he was the Lantern Rouge at the Tour de France a couple of years ago. And
don't you get the feeling that's self-generated pressure
very
that he
much
puts
so,
on himself?
Very much so. Mm. But he was very, very relaxed at the event that we were at, and really saw a different side to him. And as we heard there in that clip, you know, winning the Irish title would really mean the world to him.
I love the idea of him buying up riders for Team Bennett from all across the globe, people who either aren't riding their own national championships or are somehow in a position to be a kind of a gun for hire, and trying to make sure he wins the jersey. But not sure that he didn't look like he got a team signed up for this year, did he?
It's why cycling and especially the national championships are such unusual, strange races, especially for a guy like him who's a sprinter. You know, it's a bit like when Mark Cavendish goes to the Commonwealth Games, and he really has to ride in a completely different way. And we've seen him be capable of doing that. I think Bennett is probably capable of doing that as well. But you know, the national championship races can be really thrilling races, and the honour, the prestige of wearing your national champion's jersey is one that a lot of riders really take very seriously.
Chaps, since you mentioned the Irish National Championships, a good opportunity to mention that Matt Bramay, a four-time Irish road race champion, four times in a row I think he won it, announced his retirement yesterday. He's been riding for Aqua Blue the last couple of years. Just worth mentioning, I think, because he's had a career that's lasted about 10 or 12 years, and he started off life as a professional cyclist, or before turning pro, with Mark Cavendish at the British Cycling Academy. But he's a guy who's had a lot of setbacks. He was hit, he had a terrible crash, broke both legs. He was hit by a cement lorry in Belgium a few years ago, came back. But he's also someone who's tried to give a lot. He's organised and run a kit for Africa Appeal the last few years. He's been heavily involved with trying to modernise the Professional Riders Association. He's also involved in trying to get a lot of kids into cyclocross in the UK. So yeah, he announced his retirement yesterday, and we've also had the pleasure of working with Matt over the last few months. We did a couple of cyclocross podcasts, the cyclocross podcast we launched with him. So yeah, just to wish him all the best in his next endeavours, which is actually, well, he's come full circle, because he's going to go back to the British Cycling Academy, but as a coach this time.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Independent research shows 10% of sports nutrition products would get a professional rider banned. Trust Science in Sport, the world's highest standard of banned substance testing.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. And we're in an absolute heatwave. I mean, we're sort of moving tables here, Lionel, to shelter ourselves from the glaring sun in central London. In keeping with that, Science and Sport are offering 50% off all hydration products from Thursday to Sunday. So this podcast will be out on Thursday. You have until Sunday to stock up on hydration products. No discount codes needed. The discounts will be applied on the site from Thursday to Sunday. As they say, even a 2 to 3% loss of body weight via fluids can dramatically increase fatigue, reduce endurance, and since your brain is at 85% water, it also affects concentration. I think Lionel's is down to about 79% now. As dehydration makes your blood thicker, your heart also has to pump harder. You need to stay hydrated. So as we say, 50% off all hydration products on scienceofsport.com. It includes all hydration products, but not water bottles. Go to scienceofsport.com for more information before Sunday. And the normal discount code applies, SISCP25, for 25% off all your Science of Sport products. Now, Lionel and Daniel, in the any other business column, surely the news that Warren Barguil's team, or Fortuneo, he's had a pretty poor season so far, and it looks like he's going to be starting the Tour de France without a bike.
An extraordinary story, this. I haven't really got beyond the headline, but Look Bicycles, who supply the Fortuneo Samsic, or the French team, with their bicycles, are terminating their agreement by mutual consent on the eve of the tour. I don't know.
Typical dandelion collect, dandelion picker, whimsical flaneur move, isn't it?
Yeah, is Barguil upset, you know, they're not doing the right range of colours, or they won't put a certain colour of bar tape on?
It's bizarre. It's absolutely bizarre. What's the real story here?
Well, I think from what I've heard, Barguil himself, and obviously that team really revolves around him now, as a huge signing for that team in the in the winter. He was particularly unhappy with the bikes, and there were modifications suggested or changes made, and he still wasn't happy. And I guess the relationship had soured irremediably. There's been all sorts of speculation about what kind of about the fact he might have been riding a different brand's bike for the last couple of months. I noticed on Strava the other day that he went out for a two-hour ride on an electric mountain bike. Probably not the best training for the Tour de France, but you know.
No, maybe that's the answer.
No. So are they going to all swing by a branch of Decathlon on the eve of the tour and pick up eight bikes and hope that
we've prepared for many a Tour de France by swinging by the Decathlon.
Get a couple of javelins while they're at it.
But you have to feel for the mechanics, particularly with a team time trial on the third stage of the Tour de France.
It's a recipe for disaster, this. I mean, there's a lot of sort of humorous stories about equipment changes and equipment failures from the 80s, isn't there? Teams... And the idea of riders riding bikes other than the ones the team are provided with, just stickered up so that they've got the right name on them. You know, that's nothing new either. But to have such a high-profile change of fundamental equipment a week or so out from the tour is amazing.
I'd like to see Warren Barguil riding one with a basket on it. I think that would suit him. He'd probably still win a couple of stages in the Alps, but and wearing a straw bonnet.
It's also surprising given the manufacturer Luke's pedigree in the sport, you know, and you look back to, were they not producing the first carbon bikes back in the 80s, 86? Tour de France, certainly Greg LeMond, Bernardino were on Luke carbon bikes.
Yeah, I've got a Luke bike, and I've just ridden it all the way to Southwold from Cambridge and back.
Well, there you go.
Bolting.
There you go. What's he complaining about?
I know.
Lionel's got bass on his, though.
Well, it needs to be pretty stiff and strong to cope with my power output and also weight.
Barguil has had a shocker of a season, though, hasn't he? Really, so far.
Yeah, terrible. And has caveated his poor results in every interview he's done by saying that, oh, he's not like other riders. He can't go off into the mountains and, you know, spend 2 weeks away from home. He'd rather be rollerblading. And that kind of thing, but I'm not really sure that washes when you're being paid whatever he's being paid.
And
probably getting on for seven figures.
He's such an important rider for that team. You know, he's gone from being one of a number of high profile good riders at Sunweb into the talisman for that team. So there's a lot of pressure on him. And in an interview we played a couple of years ago, he talked about the difficulties he had with the lifestyle of being a professional rider, and he'd gone to the south of France to live and train, and found that he just sat on the sofa eating M&Ms and playing FIFA Football Manager. So he's already been very candid about that. So he disappeared back home to Brittany to rollerblade with his girlfriend.
Well, I mean, that sounds very pleasant.
It's lovely. I mean, he comes across like a lovely guy.
We talked, didn't we, during the last week of last year's tour, just how well Team Sunweb managed to sort of harness their twin talents, Michael Matthews and Warren Barguil, and got them working for one another when they could, and it paid off handsomely, didn't it? Matthews won a stage, I can't remember where that was, but it ended up in the green jersey, and Barguil took the polka dot jersey, and you looked at that and thought that is a team, as I've just said, harnessing those talents and getting the best out of both of them and working with Barguil's kind of temperament and character. And you look at his move to Fortuneo, where he clearly is the biggest thing about that team. He not only has to bear all of the pressure, everything is for him, and that probably isn't perhaps the best situation for a rider like that. Maybe he needs that kind of, maybe he needs to be straitjacketed a little bit, even if that feels uncomfortable. It's the best way to get out of him, get the best results out.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely agree with some of that. Maybe not straitjacketed, but I think he is straitjacketed when he's the leader. And I think there needs to be an element of whimsical about his riding. And that is how he wins stages. And I'm not really sure that being the focus of everything and everyone's attention is the best thing for him. Easy to say now. And having said that, I do expect him to have a very good tour, simply because he is that talented. I mean, it's easy to forget just how brilliant he was in the mountains in the Tour last year. He won two stages, came very close to winning a third. And there's huge latitude for a guy like that who has the ability of a GC rider, but who will inevitably play himself out of the GC in the first week. There's massive scope for guys like that to go and win two or three stages.
Absolutely. Well, listen, before we wrap up this week, a few little pieces of business. First of all, I went to see the film Time Trial at the weekend there in Edinburgh, an event with David Miller, who's the star of the film, and the director of Finlay Pretzel. It was chaired by Ned Bolting before he went off on his bike ride with you, Lionel. It was the second time I've watched it, and I really, really enjoyed it more than I'd enjoyed it the first time, and I did enjoy it the first time, but I'd seen clips of it before, and I think I needed to see it again as a whole, and I think those who like cycling will really enjoy the film, and in particular they will enjoy a view of the sport that they haven't had before. The cameras that they had on motorbikes, on bikes, in cars, just give you a perspective on it and really take you inside the sport in a way that nothing else I don't think has done before. It's got a fantastic soundtrack as well. It's out in cinemas between the 29th and the 5th of July in Edinburgh, Belfast, Glasgow, London and Lewes. And from the 12th of July, all over the UK and Ireland, around 80 cinemas. You'll get all the information that you need on it at timetrialfilm.com/UK. timetrialfilm.com/UK. I'd really recommend it. And Finlay, who's a friend of mine, full disclosure, he does say that the film should really be experienced in a cinema, and I would certainly agree with that. It's definitely worth a look. We're going to have an announcement next week about our plans for the Tour de France and Kilometre Zero. We've got a supporter for Kilometre Zero, which we're delighted about. Mm-hmm. We'll tell you about that next week. So Kilometre Zero will be coming to you Monday to Friday, 15 episodes throughout the Tour de France. Really looking forward to that. We also have a friend special to come out before the Tour de France, coming out imminently, and that is an interview that I did with Jean Bobby, former rider, brother of Louis Jean Bobby, three-time Tour de France winner. Let's hear a little excerpt from that now. Here is Jean Bobby. To ask you about the cycling in the 1950s, because in the book you describe a golden era, you know, with great stars, and looking back now, do you still feel that period, the 1950s, was the real golden era of cycling?
Yes, I think so. Because at the same time, you had not only one champion, but six or seven. Two Italians, Bartoli and Coppi, Rugo and Sittberger, the Belgian, two Swiss, Koblet and Kuder, and all of them were riding every week. They were not specialized. And as soon as the Tour de Flandre was finished, Paris-Roubaix came, and all of them were in the match. Mm. So I think it's really the best. Non, c'est pas vrai. C'est pas une bonne expression.
No, that's not true. That's not the right way to put it. It was without a doubt the most interesting period in cycling history. Oh, and I'd add one thing, if you don't mind, that it was also the greatest period in the history of British cycling. In 1954, I was in London with my brother, Louison, who was world champion at the time. There was a huge party for the presentation of the winners of the National Time Trial Championships. Really, it was an absolutely enormous party. I'd accepted the invitation on behalf of my brother because he was really very busy at the time. He'd been invited to attend by a terrific journalist called Jock Wadley. It was Jock who'd organised the get-together. So in the month of November 1954, we went to this quintessentially English party celebrating the time trial champions. And just 1 month later, the British League of Racing Cyclists was established. That moment was truly the transformation of British cycling for me.
Du contre-la-montre. Et un mois plus tard, la BLRC était créée. Juste à ce moment-là. Ça a été vraiment la transformation pour moi de cyclisme britannique.
So that was Jean Bobby. I saw him at home in Brittany just 2 days before his 88th birthday, and he was a lovely and fascinating man who, you know, is a link, one of the few surviving links to that golden era of cycling in the 1950s.
And is that our 10th full-length Friend of the Podcast episode of this year? I think it may well be. But the Friend of the Podcast programme is a minimum of 11 full-length episodes for £15. Of course, we chucked in Kilometre Zero from the Giro d'Italia this year as well, so 9 sort of 15, 20-minute episodes on top of that. We're massively over-delivering here. But rather than take the second half of the year off and only produce one Friend of the Podcast episode, we're just going to carry on at the same pace.
Do you want to tell people how they become a friend of the podcast if they aren't already?
Go to thecyclingpodcast.com/friends and you need to basically register for the site, then sign up and pay your £15, and then there are instructions how to add your episodes to your preferred podcast player.
Is that how it works? I always thought that people just had to sort of randomly, vaguely curry our favour to become our friend.
That can work too, actually.
Say nice things about us.
Yes. Oh, but I mean, the other extraordinary thing, we've been offered some accommodation at the Tour de France.
We're doing an event in Annecy on the first rest day. That's the 16th of July. If you're interested in coming to that event, it's free at Base Camp just outside Annecy. Please email us, contact@thecyclingpodcast.com. It's really filling up, actually. A lot of people are around there, obviously, and are going to come along, so looking forward to that. Anything else?
No. Has been the longest build-up to a Tour de France I can ever remember. This is our second preview episode, and we've got one more to go.
Next week will be our...
Oh, no, but Napalm, but everyone's moaning about it. Why can't people just enjoy it? Revel in the fact that, you know, it's still June.
Gives you longer on your spreadsheet.
You know.
It's not. Yeah, I've got my spreadsheet to finish.
Or holidays.
Mm. Holiday?
I'm sure Chiro's delighted. I'm sure Chiro is thrilled with this long...
Yeah, yeah. What is his notion...
Languid build-up
this notion of holiday. I quite like the idea of this.
Yeah.
No time for that, unfortunately.
Right, but, let's wrap things up.
Yeah.
Lionel, thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard.
Laurel Burney. Thank you, Cesc.
Thank you.